Hello?
That was a cool thing about the 80s, you know, like, all those movies were like that.
One way or another, I'm gonna find you. I'm gonna get you one way or another.
Every one of my games, I try to do something brand new.
One way or another, I'm gonna see you.
Best time to get someone, man, when they're well fed and had a couple of wines. Welcome to the Retro Project Podcast. My name is Steve, and I am your host. Today's episode is part two of our chat with Warren Robinette. Warren is the programmer of one of the greatest games of all time, Atari's Adventure. Now, Warren will be with us in just one moment. Until then, I would like to let you know where you can find us. You can find us on the Twitter, at Retro Project Pod. You can find us on Facebook, at Retro Project Pod. And if you'd like to send us an email, you can do that by sending it to theretroprojectpod@gmail.com. Now, if you enjoy the show, please head into iTunes, leave us a review. It really, really does help the show. Now, that's enough for me. So please welcome Mr. Warren Robinette.
I think a thing you'll find interesting maybe is, I had a bit more work to do after I got back from vacation. Well, so the next thing is that someone had shown it to the marketing department while I was gone for a month, and the marketing department liked it. And marketing people actually never talked to the programmers. I never even met one. Mm. It was kind of strange, but Atari was pretty weird in some ways. So I heard indirectly that marketing liked it. George told me that we didn't have meetings of the Atari programmers very often, once every 2 weeks. But in one of those meetings, right after I came back, George said that marketing liked it so I could keep working on it. But they wanted me to forget about the dragons and the bat and the swords and turn it into a game about Superman. Okay.
I've got one great love in my life, apart from family, of course. I hope my wife didn't listen to that and she's now waiting for me in the background going, who's this great love of yours? is Superman.
Really? Are you talking about the comic books or the game?
Comic books, games, television shows, the character himself.
Oh.
For me, it has always and will always be Superman. That's the second game that I played to death. Adventure and Superman were the two games.
Okay. Well, here's how Superman came to be. I went on this vacation for a month. I came back. They told me I got to change my game into Superman. And I was working on low-level stuff, like how you pick up an object, stuff like that. So I was working on things that would be the same no matter whether it was dragons and bats or whether it was Clark Kent and Lois Lane and Superman. So I was just going on, and I was told that in one meeting. And then 2 weeks later, I was told it again, and what I said the second time was, well, I'll do that if I have to, but what I'd rather do is work on this Dungeons & Dragons concept I started with, okay? And George already didn't like me because I defied him, so he's frowning when I said this, but I didn't say I wouldn't do it. I just said I preferred to do my original concept, and so every time this came up, which was about every 2 weeks, this was in the fall of 1978,
yep.
I said, I'll do it if I have to, but I don't want to. And about the fourth time I said that, another Atari game designer, a colleague, fellow Atari 2600 programmer, John Dunn, he spoke up right after I said that and said, hey, I'll take over your code and make Superman if you don't want to, and then you can do your game. And so I said, okay. And so George was running the meeting. He was the boss of the game designer, supposedly. And he was frowning, but he didn't forbid it. So Dunn volunteered to take over my code to make Superman, and he did. And that left me free to pursue my original concept. So is this a story you have heard before, or is it new?
I actually basically would probably explain why one of the things I love about the two games is the ability to explore.
Yeah, the network of rooms and objects in the rooms, that was there when I handed over the code to John Dunn.
Right.
But he had to change the way the display worked because a little square wasn't going to work for Superman, was it? So
he made the
avatar. He made this blue and white avatar with the rippling cape and flesh-colored face and so forth.
Yeah. So a bit of adventure, and there's a bit of you in Superman as well.
Well, there's the moving off the edge of the screen into an adjacent room.
Yep.
That was my way of adapting the resources of the Atari 2600 to do a network of rooms,
yeah.
That moving off the edge of the screen thing, and using little icons as graphical objects. That was something I did from the very beginning.
So the collision detection on Superman, because one of the great things about adventure is the preciseness of the collision detection between the objects. Was the collision detection part of the thing that also came over to Superman? Because that's very precise as well.
I think the answer would be yes, but I don't know the precise details of exactly what John changed and what he didn't change. But my guess is that pretty much came over as is. So the collision detection was built as Atari hardware, you know.
Oh, so basically there was a code that already existed that you would use for the collision detection. That wasn't something that you had to nut out on your own.
Well, I had to write a little bit of code to do it, and there were some decisions to be made, but there was hardware support for detecting collisions between objects. So the fact that it was pixel level precise, that was given to us by the hardware.
Okay, because that is one of the impressive things about the game is, like you said, it is pixel level as far as the collision detection goes. Now, you're doing adventure,
right.
You're making drown a lot by the sounds of things. It sounds like one of the things George is doing the most during your interactions is he's frowning whenever whenever he has to deal with you. We don't.
Well, I'll tell you a point. I'll tell you a point at which he smiled. After I had finished adventure and after I turned it in and it had a little surprise in it, which was my name hidden deep in the game, and he was still treating me as a bad employee. I invented a fucking genre of video games. I made $40 million for Atari, and George is telling me, you are hard to direct. So I was pretty demoralized at that point. I went in there one day and told him I was quitting, and then he smiled. And that was pretty irritating, but I thought I was going to get the last laugh. I knew that I had my signature hidden in the code that I had turned in, and I hadn't told anybody. And so George is smiling when I told him that I'm quitting, and I kind of thought to myself, well, fuck you, George. You're going to get a big surprise in 6 months. And I turned on my heel and walked away.
Now, I never found the dot when I was a kid. Well, this is the time before the internet, the time before message boards and all that kind of thing. So it wasn't something that you could just go online and find the walkthrough for, as you can with stuff today. But also the other side of that as well is the fact that, you know, programmers like yourself also didn't have access to the internet. So were you aware at the time when it was published of just how wide-reaching and how... Because obviously you can see the sales side of things.
No, not really. Because the internet didn't exist yet, there's no way for fans to find me.
Yeah.
I never got a single piece of fan mail until the internet came along. First 15 years, I thought, no, I was aware that it was pretty popular at the time it came out in the early 80s. I had a cousin back in Missouri who thought I was a god. Okay. He was 5 years younger than me, and he loved adventure. I got him a 2600 and a copy of adventure at the company store and gave it to him for Christmas 1979, I guess, or 80 or something. And so Russell thought I was a god, but he was about the only person in the country that knew who created adventure, because at first, because, or let's say he played Slot Racers. Okay, he knew who created Slot Racers.
Yep.
But nobody else knew. And so the fact that I'd already made one video game, Slot Racers, and I'd seen it come out Christmas 1978, I saw the box. The box said Slot Racers by Atari. No mention of me on the box, on the cartridge, you know, not even in the tiniest little 1/20th of an inch high text. There was no mention of my name anywhere. It was all just Slot Racers by Atari. So that gave me a crystal clear idea of what was going to happen with Adventure. It's going to be Adventure by Atari. And that pissed me off because I had a good idea. I had to fight like a banshee to even get to do it. I had a boss who told me not to do it. And when I showed it was feasible, he was mad. And when I wanted to do my original good idea instead of some idea cooked up by the morons in marketing, he was mad at me because I didn't do that. I really had to fight pretty hard to the political currents at Atari were pretty damn tricky. And I was lucky to be able to navigate through all of those tricky political currents to get to do the game I wanted to do. And I thought it was pretty good, but to be honest with you, I had no idea none of us knew what was going to happen with video games. This is 40 years ago. Anybody that tells you that they foresaw it all is just full of shit. Okay? Well, I'm sure you can find people that said they saw it all coming.
Oh, There's always someone who turns around and goes, yep, I knew from day one.
That's right.
Who turn around and go, yeah, well, I saw the writing on the wall for all of this.
So look, I'm not saying that. I'm telling you the truth, which is that I thought the game was pretty good, but I didn't know whether it was going to be a success or not. You never know until it's released. I thought I wasn't all that excited about Slot Racers. It was my first game, but I thought it was decent.
Yep.
But I have to say it wasn't that great of an Atari video game. But I learned a lot while I was doing with it. I learned a lot from doing it. And you can't really tell as the creator you're too close to it. You do the best you can. You cut it loose, and then you see what happens. You just really don't know.
It's like art. I mean, really, that's what you're producing. You're putting something out there. You're putting a piece of yourself out there.
Let me tell you another thing about Adventure that you might find interesting. So after John Dunn took over my code and took the monkey off my back, then I was free to go implement the Dungeons & Dragons thing. And so there I was working for a couple months. And I had proven that it was feasible because you could move from room to room. You could pick up and drop objects. I had this dragon that chased you around, but nothing happened when it caught you. I had a chalice, but nothing happened if you brought the chalice into the yellow castle. And I had one other object. I think it was a roadrunner. It was a bird that ran around, but I didn't know what it should do. And so I was actually stuck. This is about in something like September 1978. The monkey was off my back. I was free to do whatever I wanted to do. Nobody particularly wanted it, but they weren't telling me I couldn't do it. And I was stuck. I had an adventure game world, and I had three objects in it and only eight rooms, no mazes. I just wasn't sure what to do to make it more interesting. And I really was stuck. And so what do you think I did? I volunteered to work on another cartridge that management was asking for. They wanted a base interpreter for the Atari 2600.
So the
basic people said it was impossible. Yeah.
Yeah.
I had studied programming languages when I was a grad student at Berkeley and also at Rice. So I had some training in this, and making an interpreter was something I was interested in doing. And the people who said the Atari 2600 didn't have enough resources to do a decent basic interpreter, they probably were right, actually, but I was interested in trying. So I spent the next 3 months working full time on this basic interpreter, and just kind of put Adventure on the back burner. I was still thinking about Adventure, and I did have some ideas during the 3 months when I wasn't working on it. So I was lucky that, you know, the term gestation period.
Yeah, for sure.
There was no schedule that had adventure on it. Well, Atari didn't have any schedules then. But, I mean, nobody was... Like, if I had been working on Superman, Superman had a delivery date because it was... The movie was coming out in the at Christmas time, 1978. So Dunn would have had people looking over his shoulder asking him when he was going to be finished.
Mm-hmm.
But I had nobody looking over my shoulder, so I did nothing for 3 months on adventure. I was just trying to figure out a way to make it more interesting. And I came up with some ideas during those 3 months. I was kind of, I like to write notes on pads, yellow pads, you know. So I was making some notes, wasn't doing any programming. And after, around the new year, the end of 78, start of 79, I kind of finished my intensive work on BASIC. I hadn't finished it, but I had implemented the interpreter and I had implemented a lot of it. And so then I shifted back to adventure for a while and implemented some of the ideas I had had while I was just pondering on it. So my main point is that I was totally stuck. And if I had been forced to release that game was in the fall of 1978, it would have been a piece of shit. Okay? it was, I'm serious. Can you imagine a game with one dragon that nothing happened when it caught you, and a chalice, and one stupid bird running around? I mean, I wouldn't even have released it. It wasn't even a game.
You're not describing the game I'm familiar with in any way, man. I mean,
each one of those, you know what? There was no roadmap. Each one of those things was an idea I had one evening. I was thinking about it pretty hard. And let's see, have I mentioned that I bicycled to work frequently?
No, not at all.
It was 13 miles from where I lived in Menlo Park next to Stanford University. 13 miles down to Sunnyvale, and there were not set working hours at Atari. It was pretty loose, that place. So I would usually show up about 11 a.m. and work into the evening, at least till 7, but sometimes I'd work into the night and then bicycle home at 9 or 10 or 11 p.m. sometimes.
Mm-hmm.
So took an hour to get there and took an hour to get home. So I would use those hour-long bicycle time to think about my game.
Well, what else you going to do?
There are different kinds of programmers. Some people just jump on the computer and hack without ever stopping, but that's not how I do it. I spend more time thinking than I do typing at the mm-hmm. keyboard. So those 2 hours of going to work and coming to work on my bicycle were especially riding home, working on it all day. And then I had some problems, and I'd be thinking about them while I was riding home. That's when I had some of my best ideas. Like, for example, one problem I had on the early version of Adventure was, you got to realize I was starting from Colossal Cave.
Yeah.
And you've played the text adventures, right? You know how many objects you can pick up in Colossal Cave?
Well, I haven't played Colossal Cave, but I mean, one of the big ones I used to play when I was a kid was The Hobbit. No idea how many objects there were.
Well, it turned out they had a limit, and it was 7. You could pick up to 7 objects, and that was it.
Yep.
If you had 7 and you wanted to pick up something else, you have to drop one. Okay? That's where I was starting from, you know? The reason that I let you drive off the edge of the screen on the left, right, top, bottom was really pretty much a perfect analogy with go north, go south, go east, go west,
yep.
right?
Yep.
The way I think about it now is I was mapping from one medium to another. Text adventure games, you could think of that as a medium for making games. And a graphical adventure game, it's a different medium, really, because it has a different input device. It has sound. It has graphics. It had animated graphics. It's just different. So, lost my train of thought. What were you talking about?
So you were talking about how you were translating Colossal Cave Adventure and the fact that you had 7 objects and that's where you were working from.
Oh, yeah. All right. So here's one of my good ideas in the context of trying to do a graphical adventure game on the Atari 2600 hardware with all of its limitations. I initially made a inventory screen for adventure. You picked up an object, it would take you into the inventory screen, and then you would see the objects you'd picked up, one above the other.
Okay. Right?
And you could pick up to, there was some maximum, maybe it was 7, but like if you could just pick them up one after the other, and then you're carrying them all, but you could either look at the inventory screen or look at the game screen, okay? And what if a dragon came by and ate you while you were looking at your inventory? Should I allow that? That was a question I was thinking about. And then here's what I decided. I decided I didn't like the idea of an inventory screen. I decided maybe it would be better to just show the object, to only allow you to carry one object at a time and show it on the screen beside you. Well, that was different. That's not how it worked in Colossal Cave. So that was a change I made based on what worked and what didn't work with graphics. You follow me?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, for sure.
So you were sort of envisioning this prototype that I had with one dragon, one chalice, one stupid bird that did nothing, and all the things that weren't there yet, right? Well, what I'm telling you is every one of those things that weren't there yet was an idea I had bicycling home probably some night. They didn't come out of nowhere.
Well, so, I mean, you've got this hour to yourself. You're riding along. There's really not much else that you can do except for think. And it's because of that commute. And but the idea that there was an inventory, that inventory added one of my favorite parts of the game, which is when you've got the chalice and you have to run like a fucker through those mazes while you've got a dragon on your tail or while you've got the bat coming after you. Because you can't use the sword. Because you can't have the sword and the chalice at the same time.
That's one thing I realize is that it would force you to make choices. Do I carry the treasure or the weapon?
Yeah.
I think I was lucky in some ways that some of these things fell together pretty well. Like, the dragons had a pretty simple algorithm that controlled them, and so they weren't actually very smart, but the fact that you, the player, had stay within the maze walls and the dragons could fly over the maze walls.
Yep.
That kind of equalized your capabilities because humans are way smarter than the algorithms and the dragons, but yet the dragon's capability, the humans didn't, to fly right over the maze walls. So those two things interacted pretty well together.
Yeah. It was the urgency, especially as a kid, you know, and even now, I mean, sometimes I will deliberately circle around the dragon's head because I love the sound of the roar. That's an iconic sound in gaming. I just love hearing that.
You like the roar.
I love it. That's actually on my phone. That's my that's my text message.
Well, that's funny because I thought the roar was the worst of the six sounds that I created for adventure.
I mean, the best one is when you get the chalice in the golden castle. That sense of achievement when you get that melody going on, you know, the rainbow colors and all that kind of thing. Because adventure is the first game I ever played that I finished. You could finish adventure, and I think that's one of the things that I love about it. Is I still get the same sense of satisfaction today that I did back then.
Well, you know what? That's something I didn't actually consciously think about. At some point, I decided it was going to be a quest. And I, by the way, I called it the Holy Grail, but the marketing department renamed it Enchanted Chalice.
Okay.
But it worked. I mean, I think people realized it was a quest. Once I had decided to make it a quest with the Holy Grail and that the objective was to take the Holy Grail into the castle, well, it sort of had to have an ending then. And I didn't actually say to myself, Space Invaders is stupid. You can't win. You just play forever till you finally lose. I read that somewhere a few years after I had done Adventure, but that was not part of my thinking. I was just sort of lucky that I ended up making a game that there was actually a way to win, and the game was stopped. You had won. It was over. That was just fallout from having chosen to make a quest.
And then you just hit game reset and you start all over again. Playability on it is one of the things. It's always another game.
Would you like to hear some backstory on that?
And that's where we leave part two of our chat with Warren Robinette. Yep, for the first time ever, Retro Project Podcast is going to be a three-parter. I had such a blast talking with Warren, and he had so many stories to tell that there was no way I could condense that down into a two-part episode. So stay tuned, because next week will be part three of Warren Robinette. That's right, instead of the fortnightly release schedule, we will be releasing Warren's third and final episode next week. So subscribe to iTunes to keep up with us. You can also go to iTunes to download our previous episodes and leave us a review if you like the show. It really, really does help us out. Now, you can find us on Twitter at Retro Project Pod. You can find us on Facebook at Retro Project Pod. And if you'd like to send us any feedback, we would love to hear from you. You can do that at theretroprojectpod@gmail.com. Now, thank you for listening. And this has been the Retro Project Podcast.